Thank you for your patience. Welcome to today's OhioHealthcare Association conference call hosted by Ms. Kathy Chapman, entitled Knowledge Line, Turning Customers into Crusaders. During the presentation, all lines will be in a listen-only mode. A question-and-answer session will follow the presentation, and instructions for asking questions will be given at that time. Thank you for your attention. I would now like to turn the conference over to your host, Ms. Kathy Chapman.
Thank you. As Chris said, this is Kathy Chapman, OHCA's Education Director, and on behalf of the Ohio Healthcare Association, I'd like to welcome you to the teleconference program the association is offering today. Today's program is 90 minutes in length. The first hour of the program is presentation, followed by a 30-minute question and answer session. Be sure to jot down any questions you have during the first 60 minutes. Questions and answers will be coordinated by the operator. Should you experience problems during the call, press 0 to be connected to the operator. Previously, you received an email explaining the call-in procedures as well as a PDF of the handouts for this presentation. If you are unable to access the handouts, please contact OHCA at 614-436-4154 after the call, and we can provide those for you. Included in the handout material was an evaluation form as well as a continuing education request form. Each person listening to the call must complete the evaluation form. Please designate a contact person to complete the request for continuing education credits. These documents should be returned to me at the OHCA office as soon as possible. Also, just a note of clarification, we do have time monitoring on each of the lines, so you have to be on the call for at least 60 minutes to request the 1 hour of credit. Be sure to watch your mail or visit the OHCA website for future Knowledge Lines topics. They're scheduled the third Wednesday of each month at this same time. We have scheduled the whole year of these programs out, and they're all on our website. The call next month is on pressure ulcers, and the call in March is on managing unusual incidents at your facility. So you might want to look on our website to see if those would benefit any of you or could be used as a staff in-service program. It's now my pleasure to introduce the speaker for this month's call. Anthony Cirillo is a healthcare marketing professional. He consults and speaks to hospitals globally. He also has a background in entertainment, performing in bands since he was 10 years old. As an adult, he has performed more than 200 shows in front of 20,000 people. An intersection of his two careers occurred, and he found himself on a mission to become an advocate for older adults. He is a local ombudsman, and he has been called upon as an expert when others need advice on dealing with senior issues. Anthony has been a popular speaker at the Ohio Healthcare Association conventions also. It's now my pleasure to turn the program over to Mr. Anthony Cirillo.
Thank you, Kathy, and I certainly appreciate having the opportunity to do this, and I certainly had fun doing this presentation at your conference last May as well. We'll jump right in, right to our agenda slide, and I'll be diligent about telling you which slide we're on. We're going to talk about something that's certainly not pressure ulcers or that specific. This is a little more global, I think, and that's marketing, long-term care, and also looking at how this all relates to patient satisfaction at the end of the day and looking at a new way to market. So we're going to talk about how marketing healthcare is much different than marketing anything else that we're bombarded with in daily life. That, in fact, there's those who need you, but there's 95% of the people who don't need you, and yet you can be marketing to them and building relationships, and we'll talk about that. At the end of the day, we're going to, you know, really look at, you know, who are the loyalists and the ambassadors, because they become a really an army of no-cost marketers for your organization. We're going to talk about the experience, the healthcare experience, from what happens before people come to a facility, through, you know, their experience in the facility and afterwards. Obviously, even, you know, with rehab now being part of the experience of the facility, people are actually leaving and they're going out in the community and talking to others, which brings us to the next piece of the agenda, monitoring the environment. We're going to talk about the fact that people are out there talking about you, and do you really know who they are and what they're saying? And, you know, when I reference a lot of this, I'll be referencing companies like Starbucks and Harley-Davidson. These are companies that have perfected the art of marketing, you know, creating marketing ambassadors for their organization. We'll talk about a lot of the characteristics of those companies and how we can apply it to healthcare and to long-term care. And then for the 95% of the people who have no interest in you, we'll talk about how we can intersect their priorities. Now, I understand in Ohio, is required to participate in customer satisfaction surveys. And I'm not sure if it's tied to a reimbursement or if these are used for, you know, competitive marketing or things like that. But I can say that, you know, I believe that everything that I'll talk about today has something that will come back in some way to patient satisfaction. We're on the slide that says WOM, W-O-M. Now, when I was, as Kathy mentioned, I fell into long-term care as a healthcare professional and a musician at the same time who didn't play in rock and roll bands anymore, and I was in search of a place to sing. And lo and behold, we had an adult medical daycare center at our hospital, and my love and advocacy for seniors started there. So normally in presentations, I would sing a song to start, and I'll spare you that this time. So I could see some of the eyes rolling and say, thank God he said that. But WOM is word of mouth, and the song I typically sing with that is I Heard It Through the Grapevine, because people are, you know, talk to each other. If you think, and I'll date myself here, about how Cabbage Patch Kids or Beanie Babies were marketed, it was all through word of mouth marketing. Let's consider some things. We're on the slide that says Harvard and McKinsey, and I'm not a guy who likes to typically read the slides when you can see them yourself, but sometimes I know these printouts print small, but the Harvard and McKinsey slide says two-thirds of the economy are influenced by word of mouth. One word of mouth is equal to 6 advertising exposures, and 71% prefer a friend recommendation over advertising. Consider this. The auto industry in the last 20 years increased their advertising spending by 1,378%. Now, you would figure that they would have a corresponding increase in sales. Well, their sales increased, but just by 17%, not a whole lot, adding, by the way, $4,000 to our vehicles. If you go to the WOM is gaining over advertising, while you look at that slide, I'll tell you that McKinsey also said in 6 years, traditional advertising will be a third as effective as it was in 1990. And if you go to the next slide, again, talking about how do people find out about health care? They're finding it out through friends versus traditional ways that we tend to market. And a lot of times people do equate marketing with advertising, and it's so much more. But saturation also accounts for a 37% decrease in the impact of advertising today. And are people talking about health care? When you look at the slide, consumers talk about many categories. You can see that 40% of conversations every day are in the healthcare space. So why is this important? Well, customer crusaders, and again, you think Apple, you think Harley, you think people who are just passionate about the brands. These are the people that are in your midst that we need to try to figure out who they are and how, you know, whether they're ambassadors for you or, as the slide also says, they can be antagonists against you. The 30 million people who see a movie are influenced by the 3 million, who are influenced by the 300,000, you know, the 3,000, the 30,000, the 3,000, the 300, on and on. People talk to each other, and that's how word of mouth spreads. Jupiter Research says that one-third of online users turn to societal media for their health information. So I know that a lot of hospitals and long-term care facilities, continuing care communities, spend a lot of time on their websites. And guess what? Even WebMD and Revolution Health, people are not going to those sites necessarily. They're first typing in what, you know, in the case of hospitals, what ailment's bothering them, and they see what comes up. Or they're talking to each other, and there's so many niche sites that are cropping up. So word of mouth is happening, and it's spread by these crusaders. And here's the thing. In healthcare, more of the burden of healthcare is falling into the consumer's pocketbook. No matter, you know, whether it's our healthcare, you know, with consumer-directed healthcare plans or Medicaid tightening or people not opting into long-term care insurance policies, at the end of the day, more and more of the burden, and I'm not sure how the healthcare system's ever going to get fixed, but that's a whole other topic for another day, but at the end of the day, more of the burden of healthcare is falling into our pocketbooks, the consumer pocketbook. And when it falls into the consumer pocketbook, people shop. And when they shop, they talk to each other. And this is why this whole word of mouth is so important. Let's put it in context. context. We're marketing something that people don't want. And I'll say that again. We're marketing something that people don't want. People don't want long-term care services, okay? And it may be years before they need it. And so, to me, there's only two ways that you market to that. The first is you assure that they have an incredible experience with your facility so that they tell others about it. And obviously, this particularly is not just the resident, but it's the caregiver and the family. And the other thing is to figure out, you know, there's myriads of people who live in your community. There are people who come in and out of your doors every day. Who are these people? And even if they don't need these types of services, what do you know about them so that you can start forming a relationship? Because as you're also finding out, people are waiting, you know, living longer and healthier. And so they don't need your service for a longer time. And so really, in some respects, some of the things you're doing today are not even going to bear fruit until 10 or 15 years down the line. But it's all about establishing relationships. I have this slide where there's a quote by a guy named Andy Cernovitz. There's an actual word-of-mouth marketing association. And when he says WOM isn't actually marketing at all, it's great customer service, I really equate that and change it to great customer experience. So let's look at this idea of the experience, because not every experience has the same value. Now on the slide where you have the coffee beans and the Dunkin' Donuts, picture of a diner, I can go into a supermarket and buy ground coffee beans and make my coffee for 2 pennies, right? I can go to Dunkin' Donuts. It might cost them 20 cents to make the cup of coffee that they sell to me for, I don't know, $1.50, $2, maybe a little more to buy that cup of coffee in the diner. But why is it that we gladly pay $3 to $5 for a cup of coffee at Starbucks? Now, typically when I'm in a live setting, I'll ask people and we'll go around the room and I say, why do you pay $3 to $5 for a cup of coffee at Starbucks? A lot of times I'll just get that it tastes good. And sometimes people will start honing in on the real point that I'm trying to get to, is that going to Starbucks is an experience. You know, you can go there, you can conduct business there, lots of meetings going on in Starbucks. They take a stance on books and music. You can connect to the internet there. And so it's a whole experience. In fact, the New York Times, about a year and a half ago, did a in-depth article on Starbucks and says, if you want to kind of gauge the barometer of the culture in the country, walk into a Starbucks. Now, I get that same experience because I'm a penny pincher. I go to Panera Bread when I'm on the road because guess what? The Wi-Fi is free, but the concept is the same. And, you know, I could sit in a Panera Bread for 6 hours and have done so when I'm on the road between, you know, engagements with clients, and they will not at all ever come up to you and say, please leave, because they know that providing me with a great experience, I'm going to tell others, as I'm doing right now, you know, case in point, but I'm also probably going to spend some money in the facility as well. So it really points to the fact that, you know, brands have functional benefits and emotional benefits. And obviously, you know, if you look at a car's functional benefit is to get you from point A to point B. Simple enough. But you know that you buy a car based on the emotions, whether you're into the environment and hybrid, safety, and Volvo, you know, all these brands who have built their brand over generations. And so the question becomes, you know, what's the experience in healthcare? What's the healthcare experience when people come into your facility? Are you the Starbucks? Are you offering such a great experience that it actually is worth more value, where people are standing in line to get into your facility? Let's look at this in the healthcare context. There's a slide, Fred Lee. He wrote the American College Healthcare Executives Book of the Year in 2005 called If Disney Ran Your Hospital. And again, if you read the quote, patients judge their experience by the way they are treated as a person, not by the way they are treated for their disease. They reserve their good word of mouth and loyalty for hospitals, insert long-term care facilities, where they feel their needs were anticipated and met by a courteous, caring staff. Harvard and Kaiser did a study that said 55% of people are dissatisfied with their health care. the Agency for Healthcare Research in August said that fewer than half of Americans believe that they receive high-quality health care. Here's the thing. When we're talking about quality, hospitals, long-term care facilities, a lot of times we're talking about metrics. We're talking about outcomes. But the public isn't. The public's talking about the experience, the total experience of being involved with your organization. And in fact, you know, I do a lot of work because, you know, I'm sort of this mission with seniors that I go in and entertain a lot. Some I'm very familiar with activity directors and their work. And I think the new CMS regs on governing activities really speaks to the experience, because the way I boil that down in a nutshell is that, you know, a activity can take place at any time, any place, and be delivered by anyone in the organization. That's really talking about meeting the experience. Let's look at how you can deliver a great experience at the same time also gaining valuable data for your marketing efforts. And it comes down to three things. We're on the slide. Delivering a great experience starts with. Every once in a while, if you hear me pause, I'm just getting a sip of water. Delivering a great experience starts with data collection, auditing the experience, monitoring the environment. So let's talk about data collection. You're going to see my slide of my favorite character, Jack Bauer, Kiefer Sutherland, poor Kiefer. I'm not sure if he's still in jail at this point with his DUI, but he is my favorite action hero on the series 24, if you're not familiar with the series. Essentially, in the space of 24 hours, counterterrorism unit Jack Bauer saves the world. He's done this for six seasons. He only works 1 hour a day. He's worked 6 hours in the last 6 years, but it's a really intense day. But the one thing that Jack Bauer has is information. And in fact, he seems to have the information before the information exists. And he knows exactly what to do with the information. So when we talk about data collection, we're really talking about a different way, almost a culture of how to collect data so that two things happen. The more specific data you collect about your prospects, about your residents, two things are going to be able to happen. You're going to be able to design a better experience for people, and you're also going to understand what people want and their interests, and you're going to be able to market to them more effectively and less costly. Because, you know, one of the most effective ways to market to people is direct to that person. You know, we know it through direct mail, where lists are purchased on, you know, basis on demographics and affluence and things like that. Well, the same thing's happening in the email space as well. But you can set up, starting on your website, ways to collect data so that you can refine and continue to build relationships so that you can market more effectively. So now we're on to the next slide about data collection. It talks about different ways to collect data. And we're really looking at a different way, because not only are we wanting to collect data about, you know, general demographic information, what we want to start doing is start to collect information about people's interests and people's influence. Because when you start understanding that, you're going to be able to better target who you want with your marketing efforts. Okay? And it's really about probing deeply and probing for a different kind of information. Now, when I do this in a workshop setting, this can be a whole-day workshop or even two, where I have a whole workbook that gets into more specific, you know, ways to to do this. Now, I'll just give you a few examples. First of all, on your website, at the very minimum, you need to start asking for email addresses, and in return to the email address, give people something to opt into. It could be a newsletter of some sort that covers aging issues in general. Information collection is a tricky thing. A lot of people are wary of giving information. And so you really want to start gradually building a relationship, because people are not going to give you all the information at once. And so let's say somebody has given you some information about their email and you send them the newsletter. Well, maybe in one of these electronic newsletters you have a survey of some sort that in some respects, by people answering that survey, it hones in a little bit more about who they are. maybe you've asked questions like, are you a caregiver, you know, or are you the person in search of the care yourself? When you do this, then you start understanding who your audience is. And so, for example, if it's the caregiver in this situation, now you could tailor a more specific message to the caregiver, whether it's another newsletter or some offering that really speaks directly to their needs. The more value you bring to them, the more they're going to trust to give you more information. And eventually you're going to want to find information about their interests and their influence. And there's certain questions that you can ask in that regard. I'll give you an example of how Gourmet magazine has done this with me, and there's a slide of Gourmet. And Gourmet is asking me, people ask my advice or opinion on, and they want me to agree or disagree. And I agree that they do ask me about places to eat and personal technology, because I'm a gadget guy, and places to travel. What's Gourmet doing? In some respects, they're kind of bracketing me to understand what my interests are, so that they can tailor their messages to me appropriately. It's no different for you if you're collecting the information to understand what it is that have, you know, people's interests. Okay? Gourmet is also asking me what's happening in my life. The next Gourmet slide says, you know, do you plan to do any of the following in the next 12 months? Redecorate, refurbish your home, take a vacation. I checked all those. Again, they're trying to figure out who I am so that they could better talk to me and form a relationship. But, you know, it doesn't always just have to be this formal online or through actual, formal surveys. It could be anecdotal and observational. Let's say, and this really starts talking about staff, empowering staff, and having a culture of information collection. Let's say, you know, Mary Smith comes in to the assisted living facility, and she's 65 or so, and she really is healthy. She has no interest, but you had an open house, and maybe she came for the free food, I don't know. But she is interested a little bit about what you offer. The way you speak to her and find out her interest just happens in normal conversation. And you may find out that, you know, for example, that she's a dog lover, she likes Cocker Spaniels or things like that. And so the thing is now to really go back and have a database of some sort where you can start recording these observations. There's visitors who come in. Do you have any idea who the visitors are? What kind of influence they have in the community? These things are things that you can find out in simple conversations. So it's just not about formal information gathering on the web or through other means. It's about really the culture. Other hints and tips. You can post portraits and emails of your executive staff on the web, because it really sends a strong message when someone knows they can communicate directly to the top of the organization. Some organizations are starting to incorporate mystery shoppers who come into the organization, and it could be that they're just shopping as a caregiver for mom or dad and want to know how they're going to be treated as they come into the facility as a visitor. And so some organizations are doing that. You know, if someone transfers out of your facility to another or to home, conduct an extensive exit interview, as you would if a staff member left. It can tell you a lot. Likewise, if someone's coming into your facility from another, spend extra time finding out why. All of these feed into how you make your experience better. It also feeds into knowing a lot more about the people that are out there in the community. You know, invite a select group of influencers to lunch or dinner and give them an update on what is taking place on your facility, in your facility. Use the change of shift more strategically. I know in change of shifts routinely are about comparing clinical notes. What about comparing experience notes? What's going on, you know, with Mrs. Jones today? Besides how she's feeling, what else is she saying? Is there something that's particularly pestering her today or needs, you know, some attention? And the caregiver who's on the next shift might be able to address it. That's changing the experience, one patient, one resident at a time. Now, the other thing you want to do, obviously, when you get all this data, what do you do with it? And again, I believe you need to store it somewhere. It could be as simple as an Excel spreadsheet or maybe an Access database. Or if you're a more sophisticated facility, you might be talking about customer relationship management software as well. But you want to start getting this feedback and sharing it throughout the organization and making the quick fixes as fast as you can. Because when people notice that they've said something about some concern that they had, and I'll give, you know, just this is, you know, probably a bizarre example, but, you know, caregiver comes to visit mom. There's a lights out in her room, bulbs or anything. She hasn't been able to get them replaced for some reason. And she takes mom down to the dining room. Well, but by the time she walks back to the dining room, that should be fixed. It sends a message. People are listening, and people are going to fix things. You also want to track trends over time so that you can incorporate them into future service enhancements. Publicize your successes. You know, if I, you know, airlines are notorious now anymore because they hardly ever get you anywhere on time. If they do make an on-time landing, you could bet they're going to welcome you to Philadelphia and another on-time landing. Or if I go and to my local supermarket with my rewards card, they're going to always point out what I've saved, you know, with my card because I'm a member. Well, you know, you can do subtle things like that as well to let people continuously know that you're improving. But also the data is going to start culling information about what I call these customer crusaders. And I have a slide called Crusader Characteristics. And again, you can read them. But these are people, you know, the ones who write the letters to the editor, make speeches, work for a political party. These are people who probably are in and out of your facilities who maybe you don't even know. Some of them might have, you know, influential blogs, and they're talking, and what are they saying? But it can also be if you have an affinity group or a support group. I know when I was a director of marketing in a hospital, we had a myriad of support groups. Did I really know who was behind those support groups, what kind of influence they had, what their experience was with the hospital, who was within those groups? Absolutely not, because we didn't look at them as a strategic piece of probably our marketing. And so it's really looking at this in just an entirely different way. And then you're going to see my feeble attempt at saying, you know, here's a database. You need to start capturing information, whether it's about residents, prospects, and start segregating the information so that you understand who it is when you're targeting your marketing efforts, but also you understand what it is that people want from a great experience. Now, you know that the hotels do this all the time, and Ritz-Carlton gets, you know, written up all the time. Because if I go into a Ritz-Carlton the first time, and they know that I prefer a room by the gym versus the pool, if they're separate, or that I don't eat the bananas on my fruit tray, it's all getting recorded somewhere. And the next time I go to a Ritz, and I might be, you know, in Denver one time, in Dubai the next time, they're going to know what I like. And so my room's going to be by the gym, and my fruit platter's not going to have the banana. And that's, you know, as simple things like that that change the experience. And again, bringing it full circle, when you change the experience and people talk about it, that's word-of-mouth marketing. That's more powerful than any advertisement that you can ever put out there. You could see on the slide where I have the database, you know, create a database of crusaders with their detailed profiles, you know, who has a blog, a website, runs a discussion group. These are all, again, signs of who might be a crusader, an ambassador for your brand or your facility. CNET says that influencers interact with 100-plus people each month compared with moderately connected individuals who only interact with 10. Okay? So the people who are really connected connect with a lot of people. And again, you can't expect to collect all the information at once, but you can expect to start to have a culture of information collection. The Seattle Mariners, using a baseball team as an example, their whole entire, every employee is empowered to be able to make observations, put them in a database, and then cull information from the database, all in the effort to please their fans. And they've come up with more niche promotions because they're constantly looking at what the interests are of their fans. Now, getting back to that, you know, Mary Smith, who came in 10 years ago and had an interest in, let's say, Cocker Spaniels, and you put that into her database somewhere. Well, let's say over the course of time, because you've now started to build the relationship, whether it's all, you know, electronically, phone calls, going out into the community, in 10 years, let's say, and she still may be young for it, but she needs assisted living services, and she decides, because you've created what we marketers call tipping points by building these relationships, she's decided to come to your facility. Well, even before she enters the door, you know, and again, this is a silly example, but it's a telling one, because let's say she is that dog lover. Well, if the facility doesn't have a house pet, let's say, perhaps the Cocker Spaniel becomes the new house pet. Or let's say you have, you know, coffee table books out, and they're on generic things, gardening or whatnot. Well, guess what? How about a book about dogs, or if it's in her room particularly? Or instead of generic paintings in her room, there's dogs, you know. What happens then? Immediately, she feels a bond with your facility. Immediately, she's going to talk about it. She's going to tell her daughter, boy, I came in and, you know, they had this, you know how much I love dogs. Well, my room was decorated like that, you know. So it's about collecting information to make the experience better. Which brings us kind of to the next piece. So we talked about data collection. The next part of this is the slide called MOT, M-O-T. MOT is moments of truth. Moments of truth. Really kind of where the rubber hits the road. Which gets to the slide, the experience audit. You know, Bain & Company did a survey in August 06. They surveyed 362 firms. And they asked those firms, do you believe that you're delivering a superior customer experience? 80% of those firms said, you bet we are. Absolutely. They then went to the customers of those 362 firms. Well, shave a zero. Only 8% agreed that that company was delivering a superior customer experience. Now, I know there's an initiative called Advancing Excellence in America's Nursing Homes, and, you know, one of the key indicators is to assess resident and family experience and incorporate it into quality improvement. But I think what we're talking about goes beyond surveys. And again, when we look at, you know, Ohio mandating, you know, satisfaction surveys, and I know that CMS has now a nationwide standardized survey for hospitals. But, you know, I'm cynical with those because essentially, you know, if you're asking questions like, did your nurse answer your call bell in a timely fashion, what does that really tell you about the experience? And most times, too, facilities score in high percentiles. So what makes, a hospital or a nursing facility who has a 91% satisfaction that much different from one that has a 94? It's more of the probing to find out what makes the experience incredible. You know, and I do believe that these surveys fall short of the mark because they leave you scratching your head because they're so generic. And what we're talking about is just looking at information collection and the experience in a much more in-depth way. Now we're on the slide CRM versus CEM. When we're talking about information collection, we're talking about customer relationship management. That's a piece of software in many organizations versus customer experience management, which is more of an organization strategy for delivering a great experience to the customer. I wrote an article in a publication called Health Leaders last January on this notion of having a chief experience officer for your organization, one person who is empowered to make the brand experience delivery consistent across the enterprise. The Cleveland Clinic actually ran with that idea and has a chief experience officer, and they're looking at the experience first through the employee's eyes. They're looking at what happens at every touch point with an employee, because if we can make our employees happy and understand every touch point that happens, we're going to make our patients, in your case, your residents happy. They're also looking at, which is very unique, they're looking at the emotional experience of the patient, in your case, the resident. even to the point of saying document every experience, including how do we announce to a family when someone has died? And they're looking at that and saying, let's analyze that. You know, how is that? What do the people feel when we're doing that? At the, I think I have contact information at the end. If you'd like that article about the chief experience officer, I can certainly send it to you. But let's look at these. I have a slide of cylinders, for lack of a better term. One says inquiry, evaluation, tour, admission. And here I'm just trying in a very, very rudimentary way to say, you know, these are ways that people come in contact with your organization. They might, you know, inquire about you first somehow. How do they do that? They might then take it to another step and evaluate you. They then may take a tour, and then, if they need the service, an admission process. So you can see that I have a bunch of steps next down each one. So if they inquire about you, they might call on the phone or go to the web, show up unannounced, referral source calls. If they evaluate you, they might visit CMS or state sites. They might Google your facility. They might ask for references. We have tour touch points. What happens if somebody takes a tour? And then what happens when somebody is admitted? So the first thing you want to do is, first of all, look at who are all of your audiences. And your audiences are more than you might think. They're not just the residents and families, the referrers, their vendors, their regulators, their prospects. There's a whole plethora of audiences that you have. And what are the touch points for each? What happens when you interact with each of these audiences? So you first want to, as this slide suggests, inventory all your touch points with those audiences. But then that's not enough. Now you want to actually go and speak to these audiences. Now, obviously, market research is something that I don't believe many facilities, hospitals for that matter as well, take a lot of time to invest in. And it doesn't have to be expensive market research. It can be research with people who are in and out of your facility on a consistent basis, if they're the regulators or the visitors or the vendors. And you want to start asking them about these issues as well. When prospects come, how did you find out about us? You know, you might have an inventory, but they might have a different inventory about how they found out. And if you're not in tune with that, you're not going to know how to prepare an experience if they're finding out about you in different ways. So that brings us to this next slide that just has two cylinders. So now you want to conduct interviews with the intended audiences. You know, what are their touch points? What do they seek? What's their ideal experience? So let's say when they're inquiring about the organization, you also find out two more additional things. You find out that people go to church with someone who works at your facility. Or you find out that a friend has rehab at your facility and was discharged. Now, I use those examples deliberately because when you talk about going to church with someone who works there, then you're talking about your employees and your employees as your first line ambassadors for your organization. I know many a hospital whose employees would not have surgery there, okay? And I'm sure you know the same. Just as there are facilities that people who work at wouldn't want to go to. So hopefully your employees don't feel that way. But it really does talk about your first-level ambassadors. It also talks about the fact that, you know, with some of the rehab moving out of hospital settings and into nursing facilities, you know, the public still by and large, you know, we have to remember that we live this every day. But the public by and large still feels that if you go to a nursing home, it's a place you go to die. And guess what? There's people rehabbing in nursing homes. And I don't think that story is probably being told enough, but those people are leaving. And when they leave, what are they saying? And who are these people? Because these people have had an experience at your organization. What messages are they going to leave with? There's a group called Peer Insight that says companies who focus on the customer experience outperform the S&P 500 by 10 to 1. Now, they're probably talking more of the Fortune 500 and corporate America, but point taken nonetheless. So then you want to work toward what I call solutions. And that's the slide toward solutions, where the caregiver expectation, let's say, is I called and wanted an immediate appointment. The actual experience is they didn't know where to refer me. Well, what's the touch point? Well, maybe we need a direct dial phone number that's always answered with an immediate appointment. Same with I arrive on time, we get started is the expectation. I was left waiting 30 minutes. Solution, appointment clearly scheduled and someone assigned to that person. And then you want to work toward customer delight. I know where to call, I'm with whom I should speak. When I get there, I know where to go, what time, what I'll see, how long it'll take, who will tour me. And guess what? The administrator's actually going to drive to my house and pick me up. Okay, sounds far-fetched, but what an experience. And in small communities, I bet this could happen. Here's the thing. If people, even if for very legitimate reasons, whether it's financial or otherwise, do not choose your facility, they're still going to walk away with an experience of what happened. And that's going to guide their conversations with others. Okay? So again, I really believe that a lot of this is about staff empowerment and being able to have leeway to do certain things to make things right and make the experiences a great one. I have one slide here. It's Mid-Columbia Medical Center in the Dalles, Oregon. And why I put it up here is that I believe that the experience actually starts in many ways with the marketing. This is this hospital's cancer website. Now, I've been to enough hospital websites and cancer websites to know that half the time you're seeing some cold piece of technology or pictures of doctors or sterile environments. This tells me something totally different. This woman's playing the harp. This other woman's doing Tai Chi. This tells me that the experience of healthcare at this facility is different. Well, it happens to be right on because this 60-bed hospital in Oregon attracts cancer patients from 7 states. Imagine being able to offer an experience that is so renowned that people actually seek you out because of it. All right? Now, I know there's tons of regulations in nursing facilities. I know there's less so in assisted living facilities, but these are just things that are, I think, you know, basics that have nothing to do necessarily with regs that can make the experience better. And the point here is just it starts right with your marketing before people ever get to you. The final point of the 3 points before we get into other characteristics of what I call these crusader marketers is monitoring the environment. This all speaks to the fact that there are people out there who are talking about you. What are they saying and how can you find out? You know that there's data on CMS and then the state about your facility. Do you know what that data says? Do you know how to respond to it? Have you ever Googled your facility? I have Google Alerts, for example, and there's Yahoo Alerts where you could put in a keyword. I put in keywords nursing home abuse, nursing home neglect, nursing homes. And every day I receive in my email newspaper articles that have to do with this. And what I do, and it's an effort to position myself because I've written a book on long-term care that really dispels myths about living in facilities, and being an ombudsman, I have another viewpoint. And so I contact reporters and tell them that I can offer a perspective on the industry that maybe is one that they haven't seen before. That's how I use my alerts. You see these two other things down here, Technorati and Blog Pulse. People are, you're reading more and more about blogs. People are blogging. There's millions of blogs and millions of readers. Who's out there blogging about you? There's my new famous example now is there's a hospital in Paris, Texas that has a blogger who for some reason has a chip on their shoulder, but the blog has really been launched to kind of keep this facility honest, and the blog is called the Paris Site. So get it, Paris Site. And so this person is not a crusader by any means. They're an antagonist. This hospital went about it the wrong way, though. Instead of engaging this person, they tried to sue the Internet service provider to find out who he is so they can shut them down. If people are talking about you, and they are, you need to engage in the discussion. if a blog doesn't have a comments section, then start your own blog. I know that hospital and long-term care administrators who have their own blogs. And, you know, blogs are very humanizing because they really talk, you know, about what it is day-to-day to run a facility, what goes on. And I think when people start to see more of the emotional side of what people go through, they have more of a feel for the industry and more empathy for the industry as well. So there are people out there talking about you, and they have influence. And there's even software companies popping up out there who can rank the influence of these people based on the inbound and outbound links to their blogs. And so if that Paris, Texas blogger was ranked first in influence, there's somebody you need to worry about. If they're 500th, it's a different story. And so it's about joining the conversation and starting to engage people. Now, for the remainder time, I want to talk a little bit more about some other characteristics of what I call these crusader marketers. We have a picture of three people. We have the hairdresser, the mechanic, and the bartender. And I ask people, of course, in my presentations, what do these people have in common? And, of course, people say, well, they're all smiling. Yeah, I know that. What do they have in common? I joke that, for example, my wife and I go to the same person who cuts our hair, what hair I have left. But I joke that she knows more about our relationship than my wife and I do individually. All of these people are connectors. These people are people who have the ears of others, you know. People talk to these people. And so, and bartenders listen, right? So I have an example where, let's say, mom's in the assisted living facility or nursing facility. She's doing great, by the way. But, you know, the son comes in, visits her, all is well. But then he goes to the bar just to unwind a little bit. But 10 bar stools down, somebody else comes in. And unfortunately, he's in there because he's really upset. Mom just broke her hip. Mom's at the hospital. He needs options for mom. He doesn't know where to turn. The bartender becomes a connector, connecting the one person 10 bar stools down with the other. Who are the bartenders moonlighting maybe amongst your employees who are spreading the message about the experience, who have the knowledge, who are people in the community who you don't normally think of as influencers, who you start need to look at in a different light? Okay? These are hubs of influence. The ultimate hub, of course, Oprah, right? It'd be interesting to see how much or little she has impact in the elections coming up. So you need to find out who the hubs are, and they're more surprising than you think because they're very common people out there who have jobs in which they have the eyes and the ears of other people. I have a Dilbert cartoon in the slides, and it's not so much for the cartoon, though. I use this in a workshop called Sometimes You're the Windshield, Sometimes You're the Bug. It's a career development workshop that I do. But if you look in the little panel between the first two panels on the left, you see his email address. And what that does are a couple things. First of all, when people write to him, they opt in to him being able to send messages to them. So when he has a new book that comes out, it's an instant bestseller. He also, and I'm sure he's a brilliant guy, I love the comic strip, but he also, I'm sure at some point, started running short of stories, and I would guarantee you that his readers are supplying him with the premises for stories. He's doing what I call customer engagement. Here's another slide with Jones Soda, iPod Lounge. Jones Soda has 285,000 pictures of people who design their own soda labels on their website. TiVo is a community forum of 65,000 people. All of these entities are engaging their customers. So it becomes, how can you engage? And so we have the slide engagement. And so, now that you've been collecting data and getting really good at it, or understanding who an influencer is, are influencers participating in your family council? Consider internal and external advisory groups. Now, internal, I'm not talking about the residence council. I'm also talking about your employees. External could be an external group of influencers, not necessarily people who have family in the facility. People who can react to your marketing, hear about your plans for the future, things like that. What influencers like are the next 2 points: access to information and sneak previews. You know, when Pictionary was first brought on the market, they went to the shopping malls and they showed people the game, and that's how the word spread, because people had advanced access. Trivial Pursuit was mailed to celebrities. The celebrities started talking about them. So who are the influencers, and how can you give them an access and a sneak preview to what you're doing? If you have some building plans, some expansion going on, who needs to find out first that could talk to the most people about it, to let people know that the experience is going to get even better at the organization? In fact, can they participate in the development of a new service before the first shovel or blueprint is drawn? Okay? And you want to use these crusaders to attract others. MCI has this program, MCI and Friends, and essentially MCI is not marketing to other new prospects. They're using their existing customer base to reach the other people. And essentially, if you get something in the mail that's sent by your friend, and you're going to tend to open it and actually pay attention to it. Well, I maintain you have some bridges to the community in your communities, and, for example, realtors are one of them. Real estate agents, they know who has the mother-in-law suites. They know who's building a mother-in-law suite. They know who's moving into ranchers because they're aging and they want, you know, the access to the one floor and the ease of it. Realtors have a bunch of information. They could be your best friends, influencers, people you want to engage, people you want to give access to, sneak previews. I have a slide from Gourmet Magazine. They're hinting at that as well with me. They want to know, hey, do you want advanced notification and discounts to gourmet events? Do you want tips and advice not found in the magazine? Well, of course I do, because I'm special. I want to know about that. So that's one thing. Give something away. Now, we obviously can't give something away like Bill Gates and Melinda and Warren Buffett do. But it's basically the premise, give something away, get something back. When Napster was the, quote, illegal file-sharing music service, record sales in the industry were up 4%. After they shut down, before they opened up again as a, quote, legal service, record sales in the industry went down 5%. Why is that? Well, you know, Napster was giving people a sneak preview. They weren't giving people all the music. They were giving them part of the music. They were saying, hey, listen to this song or two from this artist. If you like them, well, then you can go here and buy it. Record companies were really, you know, pardon my bluntness, but really stupid. They really went about this wrong way. They should have realized that Napster was actually aiding record sales. Brigham and Women's Hospital sends a nurse and a physical therapist to the home before surgery to check the environment out. Okay? You can offer an in-home assessment to make the home senior-friendly. Local vendors might participate. This introduces you to a community of members and caregivers who might not need your services now, but could down the line. You might want to bring your most popular activity into the home or into the community. Provide geriatric assessments. Start an affinity program. Even simply publish a brochure on how to choose a facility. You can obviously emulate others that are out there. The important thing is that you're the one who's doing it, not your competitor. So giving something away is one of these crusaders, these hallmarks of these crusader marketers. I have some slides about a hospital in Canada called Schulbeis Hospital. And they are well known for using all of these techniques to create ambassadors. They specialize in hernia operations, and a same-day operation is actually a 3 or 4 day stay for them. Now, they buck the experience piece a little bit because they have no private rooms, they have phone, TVs, dining, and communal areas, and they do that because they want to bring communities of patients together. And when they do, those patients talk to each other, and bonds are formed. They give something away. Free checkups to all former patients, mobile clinics. They collect information. They have 130,000 people they survey every year. And they stimulate interaction with this reunion dinner, of which I have three pictures of on your slides there. It says dinner, entertainment, camaraderie, and examination of the hernia repair. Dr. Scholdeis, a real doctor, had this reunion idea and started out small to bring people back to not only socialize and catch up, but to also to examine their hernia operations to see how he can improve his processes. Now, this dinner became so popular that it topped out at 1,500 people, and they had to bring it down to 1,000 because it was just too popular. So there you have. They're dining, then they're dancing, and then the guys are in line to go into a private screening area. Now, you're probably looking at each other and say, well, that's kind of strange. Yes and no, because these guys are in animated conversation, okay? And they're talking about their hernia operations, but they also know who brought them together in this great event that night. So imagine if a hospital, for example, was going through a tax challenge in the States, for example. Tax exemption's a big thing. Wouldn't you like to have an army of these people on your side? It's no different with your facilities. Again, it's how do you bring these communities together. And I'll just, you can briefly look at the slide that says Scholdeis Hospital Canada. 40% of their new patient referrals are from former patients, 34% from healthcare professionals, 13% from acquaintances, and 4% from traditional marketing. They're doing all the things we talked about, including creating community, which is the next slide. You know, Harley has its road rally. Saturn has picnics. They do work for Habitat for Humanity. They have a huge blood drive donor day every year. They bring people together. They move out of the way so that these people can communicate with each other. So, how can you link families of residents who have similar interests or problems? Pair and introduce residents with similar interests. Have a reunion dinner for caregivers who've had loved ones at the facility. Now, you know, I have a facility up in the mountains of Pennsylvania, and I had a dear friend, Milton Bainbridge, whose wife was at the facility, passed on, and he continued to volunteer there for years. So there is ambassadors, your caregivers and your volunteers, you know. So think about how you engage them as well. Have a reunion dinner for people who rehabbed in your facility and were successfully, you know, discharged to home. In other words, create communities through the causes you adopt, sponsor, or take a lead. Which brings us to the next thing, cause marketing. Cause marketing is less about your participation in other people's causes and more about a cause that you own. I'll give you an example from my hospital days. I had a CEO who was the master of vagueness, I guess, or vaguely articulated expectations. He came in one day and said, think bicycle safety, and he walked out the door. And I was supposed to figure out what the heck that meant. Well, it turned out we were seeing a lot of head injuries in our emergency department from kids who were not wearing bicycle helmets at a time in New Jersey when there were no bicycle helmet laws. So that morphed into a bicycle safety day that became so successful that it became an albatross around my neck because I couldn't get rid of it even if I wanted to. And it brought together the daily newspaper in the community. It brought the cable company who did local television spots. It brought the Boy Scouts who did the course. And so you talk about building relationships. We had a sister hospital that was 6 miles down the road of what I was responsible for. And because it was healthcare in the 1990s, you didn't need duplicative services 6 miles apart, and we had to close that hospital. Well, the relationships we formed over the 6-7 years of my tenure there actually helped us, you know, with events like this to ease the, flack, for lack of a better word, of the PR that might happen with the closing of a hospital. When we closed that hospital, this hospital was in the community 85 years, 50 years more than the hospital, the main hospital, was staying in the community. There were deep-seated emotions with this. But guess what? Instead of being a weekly story or a monthly story in the newspaper, it was two stories. The day we announced it and the day we closed it 2 years later. That's pretty good because we were building, you know, relationships in the community, and some of it was through the causes we adopted. Next, brand extensions. Develop services and products that extend your brand. You know, Michelin was a rubber company back in the 1800s when the car was introduced. They published this Michelin guide. And the guide was to get people interested in traveling, but not traveling in any old way, traveling by car. If people got excited about getting in their own car and traveling, more cars would be sold. More cars would be sold, more rubber would be used. And Michelin became the Michelin tire company. When commuter trains were first introduced, people had a problem. They were scratching their head. Guess what? On the weekends, these lines are dead. What do? They built amusement parks at either end. They extended their brand and opened up the service to the weekend. Believe it or not, American Idol is a brand extension of Simon Cowell's desire to sign top recording acts to his record label. That's all it was about. But then, this thing became kind of a monster on its own. Okay? So, for instance, selling durable medical equipment is a brand extension. Offering home health services is a brand extension. But even if you think about it in this way, you know, a lot of times it's about the caregiver who I believe you're trying to impress in the facility. The one thing they need is more time. More time they can spend with their loved ones, the better for you, the better for them. So a brand extension could be offer an errand service. So while they're visiting, someone else can go get their car wash, get the oil change, drop off the dry cleaning, pick up the prescription, run to the grocery store. Caregivers could pay a nominal fee, the direct cost of the goods and services you procure. That's extending your brand. There's a quote here that I absolutely love. I'll read it. If I buy a digital camera or a car, I'm not going to buy another one probably for years. Just because I'm not in the purchasing market, that doesn't mean my customer experience is at rest. Customer experience is always adding up to the next purchase. Something to really consider. People are always mulling over the sum of all experiences with you to decide if they're going to use you over time. So it's everything you're doing. Now, I know we're running a little bit over the hour, and these are final slides coming up. But this is the next point. This is the 95% of the people who want nothing to do with you. Now, there's a picture of a little boy in a sink having a bath. Everybody go, ah, let me hear you. I can't hear you. I think I just heard you. That's my grandson. Now, listen, I have, on the surface, no interest in what you offer. You know, I have an 86-year-old mother who's in Florida. She's healthy, thank God. She's living independently. She still drives, has a boyfriend. Things are good. Knock on wood, she'll be fine. Of course, I have an interest in you for consulting and presentations and things like that, but not from your core services. I do have an interest in this guy, though, because he's my priority. And that brings us to the next slide, make their priority your priority. There are people who out there who have not experienced you or encountered you who could be influencers, and it becomes, how do you intersect their priorities? How do you intersect their interests? And we talked about all that data collection earlier. You know people's interests, you could start understanding how you can intersect those interests. There's a slide from the Edelman Trust Barometer, and it says, are you most likely to trust the person of he or she, and the number one, in all countries, share common interests with you? Now, the only way you can share common interests with people is knowing what those interests are so that you can understand how to intersect them. I have a slide of the cast from the Desperate Housewives, and I maintain that you can go through all of these people and find a way to intersect their priority. You know, Mike here is, he likes sports, and he had some time on his hands because he's single. Well, you know, back in when I first started out in healthcare marketing, it really wasn't marketing. It was about community relationships. And, you know, we would do things like sponsor the soccer team. Well, those things are still more important than ever, but even more strategically important. So, you know, if I'm the boomer, the grandparent, and grandparents are becoming a huge force in this country, they don't need your services yet. But if you're sponsoring the soccer team and showing up on the field and building the relationship, they're going to pay attention. Mike could be your coach for the team. Gabrielle and Carlos are socialites, have absolutely no interest in long-term care services, but they do have an ego. And then if you have a charity function or a gala or a fundraising campaign that they could chair, you're speaking right to them. So it's all about intersecting people's priorities. again, in a larger context, I have a workbook where I go through a whole life event matrix. You know, and here's just some things. Last child leaves home, child marries, birth of a grandchild, starting a business, losing a job. How can you intersect those priorities? Well, obviously, on the next slide, the life event matrix, the last child leaves home, maybe it's time to volunteer somewhere, maybe in your facility. We talked about the birth of a grandchild. Maybe it's those soccer sponsorships taking on a whole new meaning. Starting a business. I'll tell you what Home Depot did. And, you know, this really speaks to me. I'm a boomer, turned 50 last year. And, you know, I've been thinking about, you know, legacy and giving back and all these things and what can I do. And more boomers are wanting to get out of the traditional workforce. And they're looking to do other things. Home Depot recognized this. And they started a series of entrepreneurial workshops in their stores. It had absolutely nothing to do with Home Depot's core products. It had everything to do with the interests of the people who came into their stores. Now, all things being equal, and, you know, make the comparison to your facility and the one down the street. If I have Lowe's and Home Depot on my corner, which we literally do here in Huntersville, North Carolina, and I'm going down the street, I know they both have the same products. I know they both have the same cleanliness, the customer service. In fact, I really have no point of distinction between them to figure out why I'll go to one or the other. The price is the same. Oh, wait a minute. I went to the Home Depot entrepreneurial workshop. My car just made a right turn instead of a left. It's no different with your facility. And especially when in the healthcare world where people expect a certain level of quality, where quality metrics are so confusing, and all these things that, you know, people are telling, well, go to this website, go here, check it out, it all becomes a mishmash after a while. It's what you're doing in the trenches that's going to determine the tipping point. Now, I have this slide of these two little monkeys on the tree, and they're obviously delighted. They're obviously delighted about something. And this is where the difference is made, customer delight, okay? It's really doing something that's totally out of context. And I have some, you know, here's some examples where you'll probably say, yeah, give me the money, Anthony, and I'll do it. But let's say a new resident and their associated caregiver come into your facility. It's a new experience. There's stress and worry. Why not provide free lawn mowing service for the caregiver for a month? Or if they don't have a lawn, provide an allowance for having their house cleaned for a month. Send flowers to the caregiver and the resident the first week. Send the caregiver for a massage. Customer delight. And of course, customer delight in some ways has to happen if you have empowered employees. Final slide's coming up. Does this cost more? Let's say 60%, 70% of your healthcare costs are salaries and supplies. If you can increase retention and decrease acquisition costs, you're going to have more satisfied employees. I think there's been enough studies out there that show that people who, you know, have more stable management and staff, on average, provide a better experience. Wouldn't it be great to be the one facility that people want to come to because the experience and the value is so worth it? If they value the experience, they'll pay more. I'm just going to skim over and you can read it later. I have a slide called Make Your Case, essentially saying that when you start doing all this, you're going to start obviously recognizing who the ambassadors are, how to leverage them in a good way. And these are going to be your army of marketers. And they're going to tell you what they think, whether you like it or not. They're going to solve problems you didn't know you had. And eventually, you're talking about lifetime value and emotional attachment. My final slide, I have the Simpsons here and then a picture of a couple. You know, 80-90%, and this is sort of getting a little bit on a soapbox, but a bigger calling, a more noble calling for this industry. 80-90% of the prospects that we have are in the home. 10% will have a life-changing experience every 90 days. You know, instead of people approaching these experiences in a time of fear and crisis, if you've been educating people and developing the relationships, lessening the fear, you've created tipping points for people to choose you. And I think a lot of times this industry has been so battered in the press that we'd rather hide than come out and be proactive in the community. But I think it's going to take that kind of effort to not only to change the perception of the industry, but also look at the higher calling that is needed. Because, let's face it, people only look at this when there's a crisis. and it shouldn't have to be that way. So the ultimate question, which is the final slide, and it really comes down to this, is will you recommend us to others? And it's the sum of all the experiences that we talked about earlier. And again, always end with the song. I would have sang, will you still love us tomorrow? Because it isn't that what it's all about. So that includes my formal remarks. I do apologize for going a little bit over, and I'll be glad to take any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Cirillo. At this time, we'll begin the question and answer session. To ask a question, please press 0 followed by a 1 on your touch-tone phone. Questions will be answered in the order they are received. If you have a question, press 0 followed by a 1 now. Please hold for a moment while our system compiles your responses. And it appears we have no questions at this time.
Okay. Well, I believe there's probably contact information on my slides, and people are more than gracious to be able to entertain calls, emails, however you want to get in touch with me. Perhaps they're thinking about it a little bit.
We do have one question from a Ms. Vicki Wilson. Please go ahead.
Do you have any specific instructions for housekeeping, dietary activities departments, that specific things they can do within our facility to enhance the customer's experience?
I don't have specific modules, let's say, for each of these, but I think it's the kind of the general premise of listening to your customer. And that could be, every one of them has, a customer that they're serving, and finding out exactly what their needs are. It could be Mary Smith likes her room cleaned on a certain time of the day or in a certain way because she was a wonderful housekeeper in her day, and she has certain expectations. But, some of that is engaging in conversation and finding out what the needs are, then being empowered to say, can I change my cleaning regimen and, do this room versus this room, and so that's looking at processes. But I don't particularly have modules for this. I just have a kind of an approach that says if you listen, they will essentially tell you, and if you're asking the right questions and engaging in the conversation, that you're going to be able to understand what they want. And also, a lot of it, if you're looking at activities especially, I think a lot of that can be predetermined by how much homework is done beforehand. And I actually use a hospital example, a foreign hospital, believe it or not, where this hospital has a concierge service that facilitates patients going from the U.S. to this hospital in Thailand. But it's all about understanding before they ever get to the hospital what their needs are and how they're going to accommodate them, and holding their hand through the whole process. Well, I think that is also the same here. During your intake, or hopefully even before, you're going to know, if you've been probing, what the interests are of the resident who is coming in, and hopefully be able to then design activities accordingly. So sorry that I don't have specific modules, but it is a more of an approach.
And there are no more questions at this time. Thank you all for your attention. This concludes today's conference call. All participants may now disconnect.